difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. We are the salt of the earth. Come to let the people see the love of God in you and me. We are the light of the world, not to be hidden but be seen. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference, we can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference, we can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. We are the hands of Christ, reaching out to those in need. The face of God for all to see. We are the spirit of hope. We are the voice of peace. So go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world. So let your love shine on. Let it shine for all to see. Go make a difference in the world. And the Spirit of Christ will be with us as we go. Go make a difference in the world. Go make a difference. We can make a difference. Go make a difference in the world.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's program is The Future. Vice President Al Gore talks about his book, The Future, Six Drivers of Global Change, in which he outlines the six major factors compelling progress around the world. He is a co-recipient of the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize.
U.S. Senator, Vice President of the United States, Nobel Peace Prize recipient, Oscar winner, best-selling author. Any one of these superlatives alone would be enough to suggest that our next speaker is a force with which to be reckoned. But when combined into one individual, it is evident that Al Gore is a force of nature. He has always been on the leading edge of promoting the internet as a tool for greater communication, of climate change as one of the greatest perils of our time. And in his latest book, The Future, of the key medical, technological, and philosophical drivers changing our world. Ever the big picture thinker, Al Gore explores how we might harness these epic change agents for the good. Although his public professional lives have not been without controversy, his record of accomplishments speak to the life lived on the precipice of passion, purpose, and possibility. On behalf of the Savannah Book Festival, it is my great honor to introduce to all of you Al Gore.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, it's so great to be here, and thank you for that very generous and warm welcome. And it's always great to be back in Savannah, one of the most beautiful cities in the entire world. I always enjoy coming here. And I want to thank Howard Morrison for that very kind introduction. And we've had a chance to visit this morning, and Howard and Mary are great folks here and contribute so much to this community. And congratulations to the Savannah Book Festival in this 6th year. It keeps on getting better and growing, and people are excited about it. I've got some friends here. Andy Wright used to work for me in the White House as a lawyer, and I'm so glad that he and his family have settled here in Savannah. Thank you to the Trinity United Methodist Church for the beautiful venue, and Follett Books. Ladies and gentlemen, independent local bookstores are part of the bedrock of our whole civilization, so let's support them. So I want to tell you about this book, The Future, Six Drivers of Global Change. I've always been fascinated with those who try to look over the horizon and see what's coming at us. And back when I was a young congressman, I had the privilege of chairing a group called the Congressional Clearinghouse on the Future. And it was started by a North Carolina congressman, Charlie Rose, the other Charlie Rose, we say now. Charlie has passed on, but he was a great man and asked me to chair it in my second term in the Congress. And I had a chance to invite to the Congress, Alvin Toffler and John Nesbitt and Buckminster Fuller and Margaret Mead and Carl Sagan and first one and then the other, hundreds of them, and it was a wonderful experience. In any case, I learned from them and have been trying over the years to try to use some of those techniques. And about 8 years ago, I was in a conference making a speech in Europe, and somebody asked me, what are the drivers of global change? And I gave an answer that I thought was adequate, and I thought it was a little better than adequate. But when I got on the plane to fly back to the U.S., that question kind of nagged at me a little bit, and I took out my computer and started outlining a better answer. And that ended up becoming something of an obsession. A couple years after that, it turned out that outline had some value in the real world. I had co-founded an investment company called Generation Investment Management with my partner, David Blood. I wanted to call it Blood and Gore, but and I hope you won't think less of me when I tell you that I really did want to call it that. But we use this outline as one of the inputs for our investment model, and it has worked pretty well. And then a couple years ago, it had grown to be so elaborate, I decided to turn it into a book. And I had a scoping exercise with some of the smartest people I could find, who spent 2 days trying to sort of look over the horizon and help to get all this in perspective. And I asked one of them at the start of it, kind of an emotional question, how do you feel about the future? And he said, I feel fine. And I didn't think that was very helpful, but but it did remind me of a story that I first heard 35 years ago when I was a young congressman representing 25 rural counties in Middle Tennessee. And on a Saturday, I had had town hall meetings all day long, and I was driving back in the evening to my farm, and I was listening on the car radio to the Grand Ole Opry. And back in those days, there was a wonderful comedian named Cousin Minnie Pearl. And a few of you may remember her. She was the one who had the price tag still on her straw hat and calico dress. And she told a story about a farmer who was involved in an accident, and he suffered damages and went to court, sued the driver of the other vehicle. And that other driver hired a lawyer who put this farmer on the witness stand for cross-examination. And he asked the farmer, now, isn't it true that immediately after this accident, you said, I feel fine? And the farmer said, well, it's not that simple. You see, I was taking my cow to town in the back of my truck, and this feller came driving across the center of the highway, and the lawyer said, I object, Your Honor, we're in the middle of a trial here. We don't want to hear a long and involved story. Just answer the question yes or no. Did you or did you not say, immediately after the accident, I feel fine? The farmer said, well, I was leading up to that. You see, I was taking my cow to town in the back of my truck. This feller came driving across the center of the highway and ran right smack dab into my truck and knocked it over and threw me out and threw the cow out. I was on one side and the cow was on the other. And the highway patrolman came up and took one look at that cow and said, she is suffering. Pulled out his gun and shot her right between the eyes. And then he came around to my side of the truck and said, how do you feel? So I said, I feel fine. And I think, honestly, that sometimes our attitudes about the future are a little bit like that. Compared to what?
You can listen to great speeches and interviews on accesssacramento.org, or you can go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
Oh, hollow words before. drive the world to peace, no war today. Now what can us poor folk do? Are we simply made to burn the truth? Hollow words before me, I heard your holy claim. The war to war to judge the gods to rip open death's door. Hollow words before me, I saw the day they fell. To ash, to dust, burn and burn still more. Oh, what more can one man say? Hollow words before me, I sung your empty song. To peace, to stop the growth of lies and theft and more. Hollow words before me, I know you'll never sound. To peace, none ask themselves what lies can name just war.
We are now living in a time of absolutely revolutionary change, and the power of these changes and the simultaneity of these changes is something we have never seen before. Never have so many revolutionary drivers of change been coming at us at the same time. So I want to run through all six of them briefly. And then I look forward to your questions, and I'll do my best to answer them, and then I'll sign your books. And I did a pre-signing. The ink is barely dry, so I look forward to visiting with each one of you who comes through over at Fellowship Hall. Well, now, to begin with, let's talk about change itself. We are used to experiencing change of a particular kind. Slow, steady, incremental change, what they call linear change. Yesterday wasn't too much different from today, and tomorrow will be not much different either. But there are big changes that burst forth after piling up the potential for change without anything seeming to happen much, because the potential change can be held back by a barrier of some sort, or old habits and customs. And then when it reaches critical mass, this potential change can break through the barrier, and there it is all of a sudden. And that's sometimes called emergent change. And back in those days when I was a young congressman, one of the scientists that came to talk with us that had made a big impact on me was a man from Belgium, short, balding. He had been born in Russia 3 months before the Russian Revolution in 1917. And he discovered a new law of nature, a major corollary to the second law of thermodynamics, which is best known as entropy. You know, that's the physical law that says systems break down over time. Think about a smoke ring. It starts as a coherent donut, and then as the molecules separate and the energy dissipates, it just breaks apart. And everything is that way. And in some systems, the entropy occurs quickly, and others it takes place over a longer period of time. But this man, Ilya Prigogine, discovered what is in some ways kind of the opposite of that. He studied open systems that have energy flowing into it and through it and out again. And what he found was that when the flow of energy into an open system increases enough beyond a certain threshold, then two things happen. It breaks down. The pattern of the system breaks down. But here's the surprising part. Then the system reorganizes itself at a higher level of complexity. And the whole field of complexity science came from that discovery. And the way we use the word emergence, the phrase emergent phenomena, really comes from that discovery. So think for a minute about what's happened over the last 20 years with the internet. When Bill Clinton and I went into the White House in 1993, there were 50 sites on the World Wide Web. Now there are a trillion of them. And look at what's happened to newspapers all over the world. Now, see, that's part of the breakdown of the old pattern. But now we've got Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and Pinterest and Snapchat, and you can name your own list. It just keeps going. I spend some time in Silicon Valley, and there are 20 new companies out there that have reached a $1 billion valuation just in the last year and a half. Our world is changing dramatically. Some of the old is breaking down and fading away and dissipating, but the new patterns are quite complex and challenging, and they bring a lot of changes. So these six drivers of global change are all emergent changes. They've been building up for a while, and now they're all kind of happening at the same time. So let's take them one by one. Number one, chapter one, Earth, Inc., a new interconnected global economy that operates as if it is a single entity. We've been seeing the outsourcing of jobs, and we've been seeing the connection of supply lines. Now we have virtual factories with supply lines running to hundreds of countries, and almost every business has to see its competitive landscape in the global dimension. Earth, Inc. has a different relationship to national governments and national economic policies now, a different relationship to labor and capital and natural resources, the three classic factors of production. Look, for example, one of the changes that illustrates this new reality of Earth, Inc. We had the Great Recession back in 2008, and normally after a recession, when we get a recovery and growth resumes, the jobs come back, and that's the way it's always been. But in the last couple of recessions, it hadn't happened that way, because we now have this global reality, and some businesses that lay people off during a recession, they're not hiring them back the way they used to. Some of them, yes. But we now have outsourcing in a completely different way. And when a business is faced with the need to give their employees a raise, well, if they can just ship the jobs over to some other country, then it's so easy now they're doing that. But it's not just outsourcing. It's also robo-sourcing, which is the word I use to describe a brand new level of automation that is different from what we've seen in the past. You know, for hundreds of years, since the days of the Luddites, you remember that story? Ned Ludd organized people to smash apart the machines that were taking the jobs of the weavers in England. And we've always kind of snickered at him. And the economic evidence has proven time and again that new technologies almost always create more new jobs than they displace. And that's been the pattern. But there are an increasing number of economists who are now asking whether or not that is still the pattern. And here's the difference they point to. New technologies now include many that not only extend and magnify our physical capacities, but also our cognitive capacities. It may not be so significant that a supercomputer won Jeopardy, but I was impressed. And a few years ago, one captured the International Chess Championship. But in addition to these niche applications, now a lot of these intelligent machines and algorithms and robots can do lots of different things. I'll give you an example. There's a new algorithm that some law firms are beginning to use that makes it possible for a single first-year lawyer working with this computer algorithm to do the same amount of legal research that used to require 500 first-year lawyers. And they don't, and he doesn't make as many mistakes. Way fewer mistakes, in fact. So the way we used to think about a situation like that, it's new and unusual, but there have been precedents. We always assumed that those other 499 lawyers would go and get a job somewhere else. But when the other law firms start using that and other businesses, then my point is we are seeing the combination of outsourcing and robo-sourcing really transform our economy. And the middle class, let's be candid about this, in the United States for quite some time now has been really struggling. The middle class jobs have been kind of hollowed out. And by the way, this trend is not just happening in our country. It's in Europe and Japan, and it's also in China and in India. You may have heard of the Chinese company called Foxconn. It makes a lot of the smartphones and digital devices. Well, they just announced that over the next 3 years, they're installing 1 million robots. Now, these young Chinese men and women who have migrated in such large numbers from the impoverished rural areas of China to Guangzhou and some of the other centers of manufacturing closer to the export terminals, what are they going to do when they compete with these robots? And the robots are getting smarter, the algorithms and the thinking machines are getting smarter all the time. Moore's Law, which everybody knows about, makes the computers twice as fast every 18 to 24 months for the same dollar. And by the law of doubling, you don't have to keep going in that pattern for very long before they get in much smarter than they are now. And they are now beginning to take on tasks that we have always assumed would remain the unique province of our species.
Bye. Now for something completely different.